Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Make way. Two more coming to Cooperstown, New York, in the Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. And Omar Vizquel knocking on the door. Let's get a little more information on what's going on. And we want to welcome in first year president of the Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. He is Tim Mead. Spent a ton of time out in L.A. and Anaheim as their main guru of public relations and media relations out there. And it was always a smiling face when we would roam the cafeteria, I guess, when we would go out to Anaheim. And he is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Hey, Tim, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. So big week for you. Very exciting. What was it like for your first class to go in as the new president of the Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum?
It was wonderful. It was a great experience to watch the process, really to make that announcement and then see the reaction. Obviously, Jack O'Connell and Jane Clark made the phone calls to Derek and Larry, but once they arrived in New York City to spend time with them and have lunch and dinner and obviously go through the press conference and see their reactions, sometimes you have to just take aside the fact that these are great athletes, accomplished athletes, whose legacy is going to be tremendous, but they're still people who have emotions. And once you kind of reach the pinnacle of what you've performed at for so many years, it's still an individual emotion of excitement. It's wonderful to be part of and see.
Tim, I've always thought it was interesting with the balloting and everything that goes into it. And with the percentages involved, it's obviously built in for things like this to happen. So I found it a kind of amusing that people have been screaming that Derek Jeter was not a unanimous selection. It really doesn't make that big of a difference. You know, he's in. That's wonderful. Somebody didn't want to put him in on the first ballot, which I think is nuts. But it's it's weird to me how that's become a big deal. What difference does it make? The man's in the Hall of Fame. He's certainly deserving to be in the Hall of Fame. But that whole stigma about unanimous and voters not putting a guy in on the first ballot to me is kind of interesting. How do you guys deal with that?
Well, obviously, so at the press conference, I still had to learn a little bit about the history of the transparency of the vote. But I think Derek himself handled it well, and not trying to deflect, but the person that means the most to guys is the person that it affects. And, Larry Walker is as appreciative of the six votes that put him over 75% as Derek is the 396 out of the 397 that put him in the hall as well. So I think it's, reflective of the sidebar story. At the end of the day, both are going to end up in Cooperstown. The plaques won't talk about percentage of votes. The plaques will call you a Hall of Famer. Derek will go in, 20 years with one of the greatest sports franchises in the history of mankind. And, he'll have the hat he should be having and the hat he wanted. And Larry will be wearing a Colorado Rockies hat and representing three teams and organizations that he played for. And at the end of the day, as I'm still a student of the Hall of Fame, if you go back and look at some of the greats of the game that hit 90% or some of the greats that didn't get in their first year, we focus on the present and realize things change. So it's a number. I think Mariano would have been just as thrilled last year, whatever the number was, because he was a Hall of Famer. And the same thing is applicable to Derek Jeter today.
Tim Mead, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. Tim, Omar Vizquel, obviously near and dear to our heart here in Cleveland, over 50%. We all saw that as a big win. I think Omar thinks it's a big win. We had him on the show earlier this week. Your thoughts on Omar, a guy you had a chance to watch, every time he played against the Angels?
Certainly. And obviously he came into camp when I was still there as a coach for a while. And to make that jump, I think certainly it's encouraging. And when you really look at it, guys, you look at the jump that Larry Walker made in the last 2 years, it really bodes well for certain individuals. And you know, Omar Vizquel was just a pleasure to watch. You know, the last few years in Anaheim, I had the chance to watch Andrelton Simmons. And, you know, so many times if people were talking about comparisons or greatness, I would hear Ozzie Smith or Omar Vizquel's name came up. So I think that time, you know, I certainly can't get into the mindset of voters and their strategy or thought process, but I think it's certainly for he and Indian fans, it's very encouraging to watch the jump this year.
Is that something that the Hall of Fame likes, Tim? That, you know, the guys have to grow? And as you mentioned, Larry Walker jumped from, I think, the same year that Omar is ineligibility. He had like 15% of the vote, and he finally gets in. I don't understand the whole process as to how that grows. You know, I think a lot of folks would just think, are you a Hall of Famer or aren't you? It shouldn't be a process that you have to get more votes over time.
Well, guys, and that's the interesting case. It's almost the Hall of Fame is, you know, accepts the inductee. But for those first 10 years, and obviously previously it was 15 years, the Hall really has nothing to do with the voting process until it transfers over, transitions into the Veterans Committee. So to really say what the Hall likes or wouldn't like or wants to do, you know, whether it's six inductees or four inductees, no, it's really we take what the writers decide upon. And I think you can certainly see a transition or an evolution of their thought process collectively through the years as well. And I'm intrigued. I was intrigued when I was a PR person on the club side of reading things on social media or reading our articles before social media of the debates and the thought process. And it's changing. The way the game is covered is changing. You know, when we vote on, you know, the older players, the golden years, and we're going to be talking about players that people didn't see play. So it's interesting. Evaluation, analytics, and statistical evaluations has entered into it. But, you know, your point, I come from a club where I look at Mike Trout and know where he should certainly end up. Right. So there's certain people you just look at it and see. And but numbers have also opened the eyes for some performances that maybe, as I heard the Veterans Committee referred to as kind of a court of appeals. And, you know, certainly Ted Simmons benefited from it. And people say, well, he was off in the first ballot. Well, look at who was on that ballot when Ted Simmons was first eligible. And you can see why some of the percentages changed.
Yeah, and that also brings up the debate about the floor, right? That there's the floor on, you know, when your name comes off the ballot and wondering if, you know, if maybe they should get rid of that. I read a couple of good stories about that this week. But I'll tell you what the best part about it is, Tim. We're sitting here, we're debating baseball, and it's January 24th. And we're talking about it, and it gets the summer just a little bit closer. And it makes me think about making a trip over to Cooperstown.
And that's wonderful. And that's the great thing about it, guys. There's so many, I don't want to say hot button topics, but certainly topics that people have definitive views on it. And to your point, they're talking baseball. I mean, my goodness, it came up on the Senate floor last night at whatever time. You know, the discussion of the one vote for Derek and was done in a joking manner. But, you know, the awareness of the Hall of Fame, the awareness of baseball, you know, I think this week came at a good time. And there's always going to be topics as in certain eras, certain performers, certain situations. We're all going to have our views on them, and I think it's all good for healthy discussion because there's no absolute certainty to any of it.
And the other, you know, we talk about the hot button, and you brought it up and made me think about that. We've got guys that were in the steroid era that are knocking on the door right now, and everyone always says, well, they should have a special wing. They should have. When you hear that, what goes through your mind?
Well, I think, first of all, it's still in the hands of the baseball writers. Sure. Right now, in talking a special wing, we don't judge that. If you go and look at the steroid era, there's reference to it in the Hall. The Hall of Fame doesn't pass judgment. The Hall of Fame just records history and its perspective at the time. So, you know, it's something, obviously, we just went through a situation last week and tried to re-explain it. about being on the ineligible list because it was brought forth about Joe Jackson. So we had to try to clarify that. But really, the Hall of Fame is devoid of, and works hard to be devoid of politics of it. It's just you make decisions. You work closely with the Baseball Writers Association. You know, there's an HOC, a Historical Overview Committee, that arrives at the ballot, the names on the ballot that are presented to the Veterans Committee. I sat in on the session in San Diego, and I can tell you that those 16 individuals that worked on the discussion, all 10 individuals had very fair and lengthy presentations and discussions made on their behalf. And I'm very proud of the process. I'm proud of what Jeff Idelson and did as my predecessor and working with Jane Clark and how she shaped the board. And, you know, you always look, as I just said to somebody recently, you always look to enhance your process if it needs enhancing. And a team, you know, whether the Indians, the Angels, the Yankees, you're always looking to better yourself. And the eyes will be there in our process on a daily, weekly, annual basis to always evaluate.
Tim, I took my family to Cooperstown about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. I had never been there, and I was a lifelong baseball diehard. It was so awesome, and I had a great time. And the thing that struck me more than I thought it would is what a cool, small-town setting the Hall of Fame is in. And when I looked at the Hall of Fame, we stayed in a little, you know, like an above-garage apartment just down the street from the hall, down that little hill right across the street. And I walked up, and I thought, wait a minute, is that the library or is that the post office in town? And the way the Hall of Fame is just right there on Main Street, attached to everything else, it was the coolest thing, and I loved it. And I would recommend anybody who has any interest in baseball make that trip to Cooperstown. And I'm sure you hear that from a lot of folks who visit.
Well, and I appreciate it. And even hearing you describe it, you can tell that there's a profound effect on you when you saw it. But it is Americana.
Yep.
And when you look, come out to the left of the hall on Main Street, and you look down, you see the American flag in the center. You see the one signal at the very end. I mean, I come from Orange County, California, so it was definitely an adjustment for me.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful. The whole concept of the Hall of Fame, I try to envision Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb and Walter Johnson and those gentlemen sitting out there, you know, for the first class. But to me, the beauty of it is when you go to Cooperstown, and I've said this many, many times, we live our lives in the present and look towards the future. That's kind of the way we're taught and raised. But in Cooperstown, and going to the Hall of Fame, you get to live in the past a little bit and see the game that we love so much through a different filter. And that's the beauty of it, regardless of your age.
Tim, thank you so much. Best of luck with the new gig. And I hope many more days for you to have fun discussions about who's in and who's out. Thank you, Tim.
Guys, thank you very much. I look forward to connecting again.
Thank you, Tim.
Look forward to talking to you, too. Tim Mead, president of the Baseball Hall of Fame.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.